ओम ज्ञान चिनिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाक चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
One's mind is always agitated by the passionate mode of material nature and bewildered by the ignorant mode of nature. But one can rectify such conception by the relation of Vishnu and thus become pacified by cleansing the dirty things created by man. Purport. Persons generally conducted by the modes of passion and ignorance cannot be bona fide candidates for being situated in the transcendental stage of God realization. Only persons conducted by the mode of goodness can have the knowledge of the Supreme Truth. Effects of the modes of passion and ignorance are manifested by too much hankering after wealth and women. And those who are too much after wealth and women can rectify their leanings only by constant remembrance of Vishnu in his potential impersonal feature. Generally, the impersonalists or monists are influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Such impersonalists think of themselves as liberated souls, but they have no knowledge of the transcendental personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Actually, they are impure in heart on account of being devoid of knowledge of the personal feature of the Absolute. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that after many hundreds of births, the impersonal philosopher surrenders unto the personality of Godhead. To acquire such a qualification of God-realization in the personal feature, the neophyte impersonalist is given a chance to realize the relation of the Lord in everything by the philosophy of pantheism. Pantheism, in its higher status, does not permit the student to form an impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, but it extends the conception of the Absolute Truth into the field of the so-called material energy. Everything created by the material energy can be dovetailed with the Absolute by an attitude of service, which is the essential part of living energy. The pure devotee of the Lord knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by this service attitude, and only in that devotional way can the theory of pantheism be perfected. In this verse, as in many places throughout the scripture, we find a description of the lower modes of material nature and how they must be overcome to understand Krishna. Kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, adiyabhishta, ishapne, chare, kishe, abe, radha, Krishna, bhaktiram, thakur, sambha. These effects of the lower modes of nature, lust, anger, greed, illusion, jealousy, as long as we don't give these up, how is it possible? Where is the question of attaining to the service of Radha and Krishna, which is our ultimate goal of life? In the Gita also, Krishna has given much analysis to the effects of the three modes of material nature. He's analyzed the effects of the modes of nature in all aspects of life. Knowledge in the three modes of material nature, determination in the three modes of material nature, charity in the different modes, the kind of people, that means the divisions of society, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that's also according to the modes of nature. So in this verse, the lower modes, passion and ignorance, have been analyzed. That the mode of passion always agitates the mind, and the mode of ignorance bewilders. So one has to come to the mode of goodness, in which one can begin to come to the transcendental position. Now, among these modes, the mode of ignorance is extremely degraded. The mode of passion is much better than the mode of ignorance. But then the mode of goodness is much better than the mode of passion. There's a big difference between them. And then the transcendental position is even on Shuddhasa, purified goodness, free from the modes of material nature. That's even much better than the material mode of goodness. Because the material mode of goodness means there is still the effect of passion and ignorance. As long as one is not fully aware of one's relationship with Krishna, then he's definitely influenced by ignorance, because ignorance is the basic position of this material world. Krishna Bhuli Seji Vanadi Bahimuk Ateh Mayatari Deshong Sharaduk. Forgetting Krishna, that means coming to the position of ignorance, we come into this material world and suffer. Ignorance is the basic condition. So even the mode of goodness in this material world is always mixed up with ignorance. Now in the mode of goodness, one can begin to see things as they are. In the mode of passion, one may be a very great philosopher, philanthropist, karmi, hard worker, statesman, soldier, or whatever. He's very active. And may have many realizations also. One devotee was saying to me the other day that we see that in this material world, many people, you get the example of Shakespeare, they have many realizations. But they're all within the material sphere. Such realizations, without the touch of transcendence, cannot take us out of the material sphere. There are many realizations of the nature of this material world, but they don't have any realization which can take them beyond the material world. So in the mode of passion, that may be also exhibited great intelligence. You see, modern society, there are so many things created by much intelligence, and many people writing many books and doing analysis, and in many ways very intelligent. But being of the mode of passion, they can't see beyond sense enjoyment. Even though they have much intelligence, and they may even speak of morals and ethics, so many things, but they can't see beyond sense gratification. Therefore, the mode of passion is also, even though it's very active and there may be much intelligence exhibited, it's still very much of the nature of ignorance. And what to speak of the mode of ignorance itself, that is full on ignorance, in which sleep is predominant, inertia. Your person in the mode of ignorance is even condemned by someone in the mode of passion. Someone who has no get up and go, who has no particular goal in life, who simply sleeps, is always miserable, is not even, in the mode of ignorance, one is not even particularly interested in sense enjoyment. He's just interested in sleeping and intoxication. Interested in sense enjoyment, but not in a stimulating way, as in the mode of passion. That doesn't, but simply an extremely gross man, taking pleasure in, or say in intoxication, or some sex life with no responsibility. Very gross, very close to the animal platform. The mode of passion also, similar to the animal platform, because enjoyment of sense gratification is predominant. But it's, you could say, a sophisticated animal platform. Because in the mode of passion, one is developing so many things, and concerned with intelligence and intellect, the mode of passion. So the mode of goodness is much better than these, because the mode of goodness, in the mode of goodness there's introspectiveness. In the mode of passion, there's a lot of thinking, but there's very little introspection. In the mode of ignorance, there's no thinking whatsoever. It's simply darkness. In the mode of passion, there may be so much thought, just like we see so much philosophy, but mostly the philosophy of the world, even though it's on the intelligent platform, intellectual platform, but it's very much produced of the mode of passion. So in the mode of goodness, there is introspectiveness, in the best sense of the term, in which one is thinking in terms of the philosophy of life, what is the purpose of life, how to attain it. He sees the transient nature of this world. Even in the mode of passion, the passionate philosopher may also see the transient nature of this material world by his intelligent probing, but he's not able to come to the platform of acting on understanding the transient nature of this material world. Even though he may superficially see the transient nature of this material world, but he's fully absorbed in enjoying the transient, whatever is happening in transit. He may even understand that he's only in transit. He may understand he's passing from body to body. This body were only in transit to another body. But because his consciousness is caught up in the mode of passion, he's very busy enjoying even that which he at least superficially understands to be temporary. In the mode of goodness, there's the beginnings of real knowledge. Sattvam, sanjayate, what? Did you learn this first? Jnanam. From the mode of goodness, knowledge arises. Knowledge here doesn't mean in the sense of the knowledge by which we build motor cars, technology. Not this kind of knowledge. That's also knowledge. But jnanam in this sense means knowledge of the Absolute Truth that begins in the mode of goodness. To get real knowledge of the Absolute Truth, one has to come to the absolute position, which is surrender to Krishna, accepting oneself as the servant of Krishna. But the beginnings of transcendental knowledge arise in the person in the mode of goodness, even one who doesn't have touch with Krishna consciousness. He can begin to understand that also by the process of hearing. Not simply by deduction, but by hearing he can understand very soon that he is not the body, aham brahmasmi. This means that one who is in the mode of goodness, whose interest is in the higher goal of life, he will become interested in the understanding what is spiritual knowledge. We find in the Upanishads, there are so many discussions of people who are interested in spiritual knowledge. Just like Nachiketa, he was interested in spiritual knowledge. He was offered by Yamaraj so many material benefits. You can have massive kingdom, wealth, so many things. But Nachiketa asked, well, will this last permanently? Will it save me from death? What is it? Will it give me knowledge of the truth? So Yamaraj was trying to avoid. He said, you can ask for me anything. Don't ask for knowledge of the truth. I'll give you land, planets, so many things. No, I want knowledge of the truth. What is the ultimate truth? And there are so many examples of this in the Upanishads. Mostly the Upanishads, though, they explain in a beginning way, an impersonal way, for those who are in the mode of goodness, who are interested in the Absolute Truth, but who have not come to the platform of surrender to Krishna. So therefore they will hear, aham brahmasmi, I am spiritual, without knowledge of Krishna. They may misunderstand that, but that's why there's such a great gap also even between the mode of goodness and pure goodness, which is not a mode of material nature. Quality of Shuddha Sattva. But there is in the mode of goodness, there is the beginnings of understanding what is the Absolute Truth. At least they're discussing it. At least they begin to discuss it. And some may even come to understand it. But even to discuss this seriously, that requires goodness. Often here in India, we find people, some or other by culture or whatever, they may ask some questions about God or religion or something, but they're not very serious. They're not really on the platform of goodness. They don't really want to know. Often on the train I find people, they want to discuss with me about something religious, which in one sense is good. But in another sense, often I find they're not very serious. It's just because they see some sadhu and they think, well, we might as well discuss something. So, but they're not really on the platform of goodness. They really want to understand. For them it's just some time pass. Instead of eating mumphali, the mumphali wala didn't come. So sadhu is here. Let's speak. Mongkali, you know, this means peanuts. So they say, you find it on the train, they come, Mongkali, time pass, advertising. You can pass your time by chewing some peanuts. So the Mongkali wala didn't come. So some sadhu is there, we'll pass our time with him. So often with these people I don't even discuss, because they're not at all serious. Just now on the train, it's coming from Bombay. Some people say, oh, we're not going to sleep, we'll talk to you all night, you can tell us something about Krishna. I'm also a Hare Krishna fan. They said, first thing, put out your cigarette. And they said, does Krishna say you can't smoke cigarette? And then, I'm not going to waste my time talking to this person. It's simply useless. So, the mode of goodness, one is actually very serious to understand the Absolute Truth. Like I said, examples are there in the Upanishads. Nachiketa is given as an example of someone who is very serious to understand the Absolute Truth. Even though he's offered so many material inducements, he's understood that all these things are useless and temporary, they can't give real happiness. He's hungry to understand the Absolute Truth. So that's the mode of goodness. But even in the mode of goodness, if one doesn't get association with the devotee of Krishna, then the effect of the mode of ignorance and passion will remain. Therefore, he takes to impersonalism, which is impersonalism in one sense we can say that's a product of the mode of goodness. As the impersonalists, they engage in activities in the mode of goodness. They study Shastra. They perform austerities. They perform religious rituals. They lead a religious life in the mode of goodness by rising early, taking bath, offering prayers. They're introspective. They try to understand what is spiritual. They've understood the temporary nature of this world. But, despite having so many good qualities, they make the mistake of identifying themselves with the Supreme, which is a product of the mode of ignorance, because we're not the Supreme. And therefore, because they're not satisfied with such an understanding, you will find that often impersonalist sannyasis, they engage in mundane welfare work, such as opening hospitals and schools, which is in the mode of passion. Why opening hospitals and schools? That's the idea to benefit human society, but absolutely on the mundane platform. And there's also the question of personal prestige, that such a so-called self-realized Brahmalin sannyasi, he becomes prestigious for doing some welfare work. This idea has become so much ingrained in Hindu culture that we find even sannyasis from good sampradayas, they're also doing this kind of thing now, opening hospitals and schools with no particular spiritual focus in it, just mundane welfare work, that's all. Somehow it's taken to be, in the modern age, it's taken to be one of the duties of a sannyasi to perform some mundane welfare work, which is not at all. The duty of a sannyasi is to be aloof from all these things and to instruct, even if he has disciples who are interested in these things, he should instruct them that this is not of any benefit, of any ultimate benefit to anybody. If you have money, you want to do something good, then sponsor prasadam distribution, sankirtan festivals. This is how you should use it. Build temples for Vishnu. Spend money, print books about Krishna. Spend money for sankirtan. Not for educating people to become mudhas. They're already mudhas. So in this verse the word is given mudha, vimudha. So how to be mean? Mudha means bewildered. And modern education means you become vimudha, more bewildered. So it's not the duty of a sannyasi to promote schools and colleges for making you into a big ass and a fool. His duty is to promote activities that will raise people to the platform of the Absolute Truth. This is the ultimate platform. Now here, because this is the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are being given the ultimate solution. Srimad Bhagavatam is not the Upanishads. Upanishads are no doubt very elevated literatures, much beyond the Karmakanda, this section of the Vedas. But even far beyond and much better than the Upanishads is the knowledge given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Cream, saram sarami udah vitam. The cream of the Vedic knowledge. We can say that the Upanishads, they are the cream of the Vedic knowledge, they are essence of Vedic knowledge, because they bring us to the point of understanding absolute reality, at least that it exists. The followers of the Upanishads generally not very clear about understanding what the absolute truth is, and they even say, because the impersonal conception is such, that it can't be understood. The absolute truth cannot be clearly understood. That is the general, that's the understanding of the impersonalists, because how can you understand something which is, you can't see, you can't taste, you can't touch, you can't tell, you can't smell, you can't feel, you can't think about, you can't talk about, avaram manasa gochara, it's beyond words, beyond speech, beyond thought. So their conclusion is that, well, everything's unclear. So that's another kind of ignorance. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, everything is clear. We don't claim to know everything about Krishna, but it's very clear that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satvam sanjayate jnana. Real knowledge means to know things as they are. Simply to know that the Absolute is beyond this material world. It is not something of this material world. Neti neti, not this, not that. That is not clear knowledge. Clear knowledge begins when we understand who we are and what is our relationship with the Absolute Truth, who is Krishna. That is clear knowledge. If we don't have that, then there may be some kind of glimmering of understanding the Absolute Truth. But Krishna consciousness gives very clear knowledge. Who you are, your spirit soul, you are meant to serve Krishna. He is the Absolute Truth. This is actual knowledge. So actually one can really come to the position of knowledge, really come to the position of goodness by Krishna consciousness. Even if one is bewildered by the mode of ignorance, or even if one is agitated by the mode of passion, if he takes to Krishna consciousness, he can be elevated even beyond the mode of goodness. Generally someone who's in the lower modes of nature is not a good candidate for spiritual life. That's why it's generally thought that the Vedas should be taught to a Brahmana, and that means someone born in a Brahmana family, because generally it's understood that one is born in a Brahmana family due to good karma from previous birth, and if he's brought up by that culture from a young age, Brahmana culture, then he may be a fit person to understand spiritual knowledge. Whereas if someone is born in a very low class family, without any proper spiritual educational guidance or cultural training, then he's going to be in the lower modes of nature. How can he understand Krishna? How can he understand spiritual knowledge? It's generally understood like that. However, the Bhagavatam emphatically says that even a Brahmana who has got the Brahminical qualities, who is actually endued in, he's got the Brahminical qualities, but if he's not a devotee of Krishna, he's not as elevated, not nearly as elevated, as a person born in a dog-eater family who is a devotee of Krishna. Vipradvishada, what is that? Vipradvishada guna yuta aravindana bhapadaravinda vimukhan svapaccha varishtam. One is, Prahlad Maharaj says that one who is got the qualities, the 12 qualities of a Brahmana, but who is inimical to the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, he is not as good as someone born in dog-eater family, who is a devotee of Krishna. Dog-eater family means he's brought up in the lowest mode of nature, extremely low birth, horrible birth. As Brahmana by birth, very nice culture, very nice training in real Brahmana family, if he's got those qualities. But because even if one who is born in a dog-eater family, if by the mercy of devotees, even though he's generally considered not qualified, by the mercy of devotees, if he engages in Krishna's service, he's come to the point. He's come to the proper point of service to Krishna. Krishna consciousness is so powerful. It elevates, it can elevate someone even from the lowest modes of nature to the highest standard. Whereas, even if one is following culture very nicely, if he doesn't have a touch of devotional service, he'll always be influenced by ignorance, by the ignorance of not understanding his relationship with Krishna. Therefore, Bhagavatam is again and again giving the point that we have to come to Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness overrides everything. Everything in the whole material universe compared to Krishna consciousness is completely insignificant. Whatever else you may do, whatever material attainments you have, you may be Indra or even Brahma, or you may be a great self-realized yogi. But if you don't have Krishna consciousness, everything else is useless. That is the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam. How important is Krishna consciousness? How urgent is Krishna consciousness? How wonderful is Krishna consciousness? How much better than anything else is Krishna consciousness that is being described here? Hare Krishna. Is there any question? My advice is don't be in the mode of ignorance. Don't be in the mode of ignorance. Excessive sleeping is very bad. Very, very bad. It kills all knowledge. Excessive sleeping means in the mode of ignorance, then all bad desires will come. You waste the time in which you could be serving Krishna. The intelligence for understanding Krishna becomes covered over. Don't fall into this trap of excessive sleeping. Be steady, regulated in Krishna's service. How much time to sleep? It's recommended to sleep only as much as required for maintenance of the body. 6 hours. Prabhupada writes, one who sleeps more than 6 hours is certainly influenced by the mode of ignorance. You should sleep as much as you need. Now, mostly people sleep more than they need. They sleep 8 hours, 9 hours. It's not required. We should try to reduce sleeping and eating and increase our service to Krishna. How to have the steady mind? Fix the mind in the service of Krishna. That I must serve Krishna on a daily, regular basis. Every day I must serve Krishna. Steady mind means, that's one reason we take a commitment in devotional service. Why do we take initiation? Anyone can chant Hare Krishna. Why do you need initiation? Because initiation is a commitment to serve Krishna. That's why when I accept candidates for initiation, I ask them, do you surrender your life to Krishna? Is that your commitment? It's a commitment that your life is meant for service to Krishna. So that's your commitment. And if you're committed to serve Krishna, then the mind will be steady in that. Of course, the nature of the mind in the conditioned state is to be flickering and unsteady. This is the way to make it steady, by committing the mind, by committing our lives in Krishna's service. have so much service to do. No time to waste. So many important things to do. So we should always have something to do in Krishna's service. Actually, we shouldn't have time to sleep. It means one may be chanting, one may be reading, engaged. When we say one should be busy always in Krishna's service, it doesn't mean necessarily he's running around like a pea boiling in a pressure cooker, just under a lot of pressure. Not necessarily that, but one should always be engaged. It's good to have some goal in Krishna's service, some things to do in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if one is very much in the mode of goodness, he can be very steady. You see, some devotees, they're doing puja day after day, year after year. Now you may say in doing puja there's no particular goal. It's not just like if someone is a GBC, he may have some goal how to expand, open new temples, and in one sense it appears to be somewhat passionate in the sense of creative. They're doing new things and making new devotees and distributing more books, whereas pujari service, it's more or less the same day in, day out. Of course, you may have some goals. I want to improve the standard. I want to bring more people to serve Krishna. So therefore, pujari is also preaching. But basically, puja service means it's the same day in and day out, in one sense, stereotyped. Not in a bad sense. But it's the same thing. So that to do that requires to be very much in the mode of goodness. To stay in one place, always serve the deities at a high standard, very much regulated. It means one has to be very much satisfied in his service to Krishna to do that. Requires mode of goodness. In ISKCON, many devotees chant japa very intensely, shaking their heads, walking up and down, pacing the floor, walking as if they want to push the tiles into the floor. Very intense. Is this a symptom of the mode of passion? I would think it's somewhat, in most cases, somewhat due to an overflow of the mode of passion. Generally, devotees are doing like that. Yeah. It's some symptom of the effects of the mode of passion. But that's being dovetailed in Krishna's service. Actually, Shastra, according to Shastra, you shouldn't walk while chanting, you should sit. Although our previous acharyas, Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, they also walked. Also, Shastra and Hari Bhaktivilasa says you shouldn't shake your head. Generally, it's understood one should be very peacefully chanting. But then, if someone is from such a background of intense mode of passion, and if he's chanting, that chanting is the cure. Maybe he can't sit very peacefully. Maybe if he doesn't shake his head and pace up and down, then his mind will be shaking more. Maybe it's required for him. Sometimes I used to see devotees would bang their head against the wall while they're chanting. I think maybe some bad thought is coming in their mind. Quite frightening actually to see that. So it may be some overflow of the mode of passion, but then it may not be such a bad thing. At least they're chanting. Often that intense energy is often there in youth, especially. If that is engaged in Krishna's service, so many wonderful things can come out of it. Practically, this movement spread all over the world by Prabhupada's pushing, and so many young men taking up the challenge, young men and women, taking up the challenge to go around the world and to different cities and open up different temples. So many may have gone away in the meantime, but their youthful energy was dovetailed in Krishna's service to do something wonderful. From the external point of view, it might seem that Srila Prabhupada was in the mode of passion. Certainly, some people criticized him for that. In India, some people criticized, why are you leaving Vrindavan? You should stay in Vrindavan. But Prabhupada certainly wasn't in the mode of passion. So the activity in Krishna's service, that's very much part of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna and Hanuman, they may appear to be in the mode of passion, but they're not. They're enthusiastic for Krishna's service. In the mode of passion, one is enthusiastic for Krishna, for activities. And in pure Krishna consciousness, one is also enthusiastic for activities. In the mode of goodness, one tends to be not so much enthusiastic for activities. So it may appear that someone who's enthusiastic for activities in Krishna consciousness, they may appear to be in the mode of passion. And actually it may be so. It may be that someone in the mode of passion, it's easy to dovetail in activities in Krishna service, but one becomes purified by that. He pleases Krishna. He gets Krishna's blessing by doing that. However, one should be very careful to actually become purified, because if one performs many activities in Krishna's service, but he doesn't become purified from the mode of passion, then what the symptoms of the mode of passion are material desire. So that may manifest as desire for honor or possession. I built this temple. I'm in charge of this temple. This kind of mode. I did this. I did that. Sometimes I've heard someone say that. I've invested so many lakhs in this property. Devotees talking. I've done this. I've done that. I've made so many devotees. This mood, I am the doer, is very much in the mode of passion. So eventually someone who's in that mood, he falls down. Inevitably, if he doesn't become purified from that mood, he falls down. So the mode of passion can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. Here, Prabhupada writes in the purport, the pure devotee of the Lord knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by the service attitude. So that should be conducted under the guidance of expert devotees. Otherwise, one may be doing so many things for Krishna, but actually, he's doing for his own sense gratification. It's mixed devotional service. So how the mixed devotional service means partly for Krishna's pleasure and partly for my pleasure. Even on the subtle platform, it may be thought of one's own pleasure, that he'll be glorified for his service. He'll enjoy being thought of as a great devotee. So under the guidance of an expert devotee, the mixture will become more pure gradually. That the desire for personal name, fame, recognition, or even gross desire for money, that becomes less, and the desire simply to serve Krishna without any personal desire becomes more. But if one doesn't take the guidance of devotees, and didn't take the association of devotees who are free from such desires, then the material part may increase more. So we have to be very careful. Any other question?
Maharaj said that more than 6 hours.
But generally, if we eat less, we sleep less. But it may be one who is eating less, he's still sleeping more. That may be something due to bodily constitution. Maybe there also. Practically speaking, we see that previously people used to be much stronger. It used to be fairly common thing to follow Nirjal every Ekadashi without drinking water. Many people used to do. Even they would, from the day before, they would take a light meal at midday, the day before, and after that start their fast, not drink any water, not eat anything. And then the whole next day they'd go on, and through the night, staying up. And even on the Nirjal, even following Ekadashi, every Ekadashi like this, they'd be out in their fields, plowing and everything. As people used to, they were brought up working hard, and the food they ate is much better. Nowadays the food is all grown with chemicals. People used to be very tough. So, generally nowadays people have very weak bodies compared to previously. The modern way of living, we have so many comforts, but it makes the body weak actually. There's no exercise for the body. There's no austerity. There's so much comfort. So people's bodies are